Good morning and welcome into the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you had a marvelous weekend, that you unplugged, that you took some time to relax with family and friends, and that you just ignored the insanity that's going around the world near you. Because we all need a little break from the insanity from time to time. Me, myself, and I can't. I have to keep my finger on the pulse of the absurdity. Otherwise, I will have nothing to talk about each morning as we get together for this hour at 9, 8 Central. Good morning. It's good to have you along today. Hopefully, you're having a great day, and I hope you're looking forward to a great week. Before we get started, a little bit of housekeeping, just a reminder in case you missed the other reminders, and that is that there will only be two podcasts this week, today's and tomorrow's, and because of the, it's because I'm having surgery on Wednesday morning, and I know I won't be podcasting from the hospital because you don't want to hear me talk about politics when I'm on painkillers. Trust me, I can get shut down. We just don't want that to happen. But that's the story coming up Wednesday morning. Surgery. If you are a praying person, I would appreciate your prayers starting around 5 o'clock. Yeah. Like you're going to get up that early. 5 o'clock Wednesday morning. And last time I had no problems at all. Hopefully this time will be the same. No problems at all. Hopefully. And as far as getting back in the saddle, as far as the podcast is concerned, I'm really not too sure when that's going to happen. That is going to depend on a handful of things. One, when I'm mobile enough to get to the studio. Two, when the scheduling for rehab appointments allows. And that's kind of what it boils down to. I don't know if I can get afternoon appointments consistently. If I can, then I can be here every day. If not, then we'll just see. We'll just have to play it by ear and wing it. Hopefully, it won't be like 2 months like last time, but we'll just have to see. All right? All right. So much to talk about today. I've got an overflowing stack of stuff to talk about, and hopefully, we'll get to a lot of it because there's just so much going on. There's a story. It's towards the bottom of the stack, but there's a story about socialism I want to talk with you about. Hopefully we can wrap today's podcast up with that story. I think it would be a good way to do that. Joe Biden, crazy, creepy Uncle Joe, is saying some pretty strange things. We'll have a look at that, hopefully. Pocahontas, Elizabeth Warren, she's pledging to do something about something that doesn't exist. But that's not going to stop her, after all. Kamala Harris has made some astounding statement that we've got to talk about today. The border is back in the news again. AOC and Newt Gingrich are at each other's throats. To start things off with, let's talk about women's soccer. I know, you just rolled your eyes. Who cares about women's soccer? That's the point, actually. That happens to be the point. Who cares about women's soccer? Let's explore that for just a moment. The U.S. women's team won their version of the World Cup of soccer over the weekend. Congrats. Good for you. Happy for you. Good job. It ends there. Because afterwards, people were dragging the American flag on the ground, on the grass. I've watched the video several times. It wasn't intentional. It was just, who cares about this flag? I'll drop it right here. And then we'll step on it and not even know we're stepping on it because we're more important than this flag is. That was kind of the thing. Of course, we know that we've been told that they won't come to the White House, even though they've been invited. We've been told that they're angry about a number of things, among them equal pay for women's soccer. And we'll deal with that in a moment. But first up, there was a live news feed This one, I think, was on Fox. Yeah, it was on Fox News. A guy standing up in front of a crowd at a pub, a bar somewhere. They've been watching the soccer matches. They're all hyped up. They're excited. And while he's doing his live cut-in for Fox News, they start chanting F Trump, F Trump, F Trump in the background. And I've watched the clip. You may have as well. And hopefully you noticed what I did. And that was that all of these people in the background using foul language and expressing their sentiments about a president they really know nothing about except for the lies they've been told, they're all grinning like a bunch of juvenile delinquents who are getting away with something. They're naughty children, and they're being naughty, and they're happy about it. That's what they're acting like. And that's exactly what they are. God love them. They think they're cool, but they're just a bunch of rowdy children, and we need to treat them as such. Now, back to pay for women's soccer real quick. I don't want to labor this point for a long time because I know that I had this conversation with somebody yesterday about soccer. If you're a soccer fan, if you're a soccer mom or a soccer dad, good for you. I'm glad you got your kids involved in an organized sport. They'll learn valuable lessons from it. But you need to understand that soccer as a sport in the American spectrum of sports is it's way down the list. Okay. Let's just be honest. It's not nearly as popular. It's not nearly as well known. It's not nearly as accepted, even though it is more accepted now than it ever has been. And I have this, every time I see soccer on television, I think, wow, that's a great big field. And those guys never stop running. This makes me tired. What else is on? That's kind of my thing about soccer. But I'm having a chat with somebody over the weekend who's been, they've been watching a little bit more soccer lately, and they're understanding how people can get into it. And yeah, I guess I can, but I can't imagine what it was like selling this idea to somebody. Can you imagine if you had to appear before the Shark Tank and sell the idea of soccer? Yeah, we got a field. It's bigger than a football field. It's huge. You should see it. It's gorgeous. It's fantastic. Oh, here's how the game works. There's a ball, right? And they can't use their hands to touch the ball. They have to move the ball from one end of the field to the other and score goals just using their feet. Oh, they can use their heads now and then. What? Oh, they can hit the ball with their heads. If somebody kicks it towards them, they can hit the ball with their head and keep it going the direction they... Yeah. Helmets? No, there's no helmets. No, actually, they... Well, shin guards, because, yeah, sometimes people kick each other. Like, I can see how a little more violence might make it more attractive. But no, really, it's all about athletics and sportsmanship, and there's a lot of movement, and it's constantly going. And the average score of a game, a game can go, like 3-4 hours. It's just it's an amazing thing. And the score, it's not unusual for the final score for a game to be 1-0. Yeah, after 4 hours. Yeah. And can you imagine being there at the Shark Tank and listening to somebody pitch that? No, I can't. Now, back to pay for women's soccer. Pay is the pay is based on earnings. What is the revenue generated by the sport? If you compare, let's see, let's go back over here. I've got something open I need to check on here. The Men's World Cup in Russia generated over $6 billion. That's billion with a B. $6 billion in revenue. Men get 9%. Okay? The Women's World Cup is expected to earn just a touch over $131 million for the full 4-year cycle from 2019 to 2022. So, we're talking about a microscopic amount of the money generated by men's soccer around the world. The women get paid 13% of that. So, the women are actually getting a higher percentage of the earnings of women's soccer than men do. But women's soccer doesn't earn as much as men's soccer does, so they don't get as much cash. In the end, they're not earning it. And once again, we have progressive people jumping up and down, pounding their fists on the bar, screaming and yelling at each other, it's not fair, it's not fair, it's not fair. It's completely fair, actually, if you want to be statistical about it, because they're earning a higher percentage of the overall generated revenue than the men do. They don't earn as much money because nobody cares about women's soccer. The number of people who care about women's soccer goes up dramatically at the end of a season with the World Cup. I guarantee that 90% of the people who found out America won the Women's World Cup didn't know there was a World Cup going on until America got close to the end and looked like they might have a chance. So, fussing about not making as much as the men is an empty argument because they're not earning the same kind of revenue. They're not generating the interest. People aren't interested in women's soccer. Okay, yeah, some people are, because over 4 years, they're going to earn a little over $130 million. Let's say $131 over 4 years. But the Men's World Cup just generated over $6 billion. That's just a little bit of a difference. If you'd like to do the math, you can send me the totals. I'm not going to bother. And that's the bottom line. It's always the bottom line. So when it comes to the bottom line, the ladies, I can't call them ladies, not the way they're acting. The women aren't making the bottom line, the men are. They're not generating the revenue, the men are. This is like it hits me. It's like somebody in car sales. They work at a car dealership. They're unhappy that they're not making as much commission as other people at the car dealership. But the other people at the car dealership are selling 1,000 times more cars than they are. The other people at the car dealership are earning 1,000 times more commission, because they're generating more revenue for the company. You can apply that directly to this. These women are playing in a sport that's not generating much interest, and hence not generating much revenue, and hence they don't make as much money. And that, as they say, is that. They're whining about something they can do nothing about, because not enough people are interested in what they do. It's not about what's fair and what's not fair. This is one of those situations in life where you have to learn a hard lesson. And that is that there is nothing about life that is fair. Life is dealing with those ups and downs and inequalities and unfairness and how you deal with it. That's what determines the kind of person you are. It's how you deal with the inequities. How you deal with the unfairness. If you whine about the unfairness and demand that you have equality because life is unfair, rather than digging in your heels and earning more, then you are a whiner. You are a leftist. You're a progressive. Life's not fair. It's just not fair that I can't do this. It's just not fair that so-and-so makes more money. It's just not fair. Who's going to do something about it if you don't do something about it? Find some way to make more. If you've hit the ceiling, if you've hit the wall, maybe you should explore other options if money is the reason you're doing what you're doing. Otherwise, stop whining about it being unfair. Because you're not generating enough interest, enough revenue, in order to get that payment you want so desperately. Stop wasting our time. kind of what it boils down to. Bless your heart. Oh, man. Still more to come. This just rubbed me the wrong way. I don't like it when people whine because they're not... It's just not fair. It's just not fair. Oh, spare me. You want to talk about unfairness? We can spend some time talking about unfairness. Let's talk about what you're doing about the situation instead of talking about the unfairness. All right? That's what I want to know. What are you doing? How are you overcoming it? Oh, you're not? Oh. Well, shut up then. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Hi there. Good to have you along today. Thanks for listening in, for being there, wherever you may be, or whenever you may be. Maybe be? Well, I either need more coffee or less. One of the two. Whether you're live on Facebook Live this morning, congratulations. Thanks for joining along. Or you're listening to the podcast version of the show somewhere or sometime else, I appreciate you being there. And I thank you for sharing the show with your friends. I'm seeing that kind of thing happening, and it just warms the cockles of my heart that you're sharing this with your friends, spreading the love, and hopefully helping to get people to understand that it's our job to educate ourselves, to inform ourselves, rather than allowing a news media that doesn't see the world the way we do. Rather than allowing them to spoon-feed us what they want us to know, we're digging in and finding out what we should know. And after a little while, we're learning when someone is shoveling bowl squeeze. Let's just put it that way, because it happens a lot. In the evening news, there's so much stuff. In fact, in the show notes today, one of the things I will not get to, and because I just know, I know how things are running right now, and I just won't get to it. There is a story about all TV media's false doomsday predictions for Trump's salute to America. We were told again and again and again and again what was going to happen, that it was going to be a campaign event. We were told it was obscene for him to spend the money he did. Let's see, it was $2.5 million was spent. Did you know that for the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service, Barack Obama spent $30 million for that celebration? More than 10 times as much. Nobody said a word. Not a peep. But President Trump spends less than a tenth of that on a celebration of our nation on the 4th of July, on Independence Day, and everybody comes apart at the seams. But you don't know that unless you do your own digging, because the progressive press, the progressive media, is not going to tell you. Knowing the truth and being honest with it is what separates rational, reasonable people from the progressives. And somebody else who's rational, reasonable, and extremely knowledgeable is Mr. Newt, former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. He wrote an opinion piece for Fox News that I'm going to share with you, and it made AOC pretty mad. Here's what he says. It took Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's visit to the border and her dishonest comments afterward to help me understand how profoundly vicious, cruel, and dishonest she is. When you look at the larger picture, it is clear that Ocasio-Cortez, the Democrat from New York, is eager and determined to undermine and destroy America as we have known it. When your goals are that radical, lying is simply part of the game. When you despise American values and find the American people deplorable and contemptible, lying is perfectly natural. The tragedy of Ocasio-Cortez's type of vicious, deliberately dishonest politics is it sets the stage for innocent people to die. The poignant, heart-wrenching picture of the father and his daughter who died trying to get into the United States illegally should serve as a moral condemnation of every Democrat trying to use the border as a political weapon against Trump. Let me be clear. The American border is a disaster. The American immigration system is profoundly broken. Despite these tremendous problems, Ocasio-Cortez and her fellow left-wing activists continue to send signals to desperate and ambitious people around the world that they can and should enter the United States illegally. These signals are simply increasing the pressure on the border and overwhelming the Americans who are working to protect and control our national boundaries. We have immigration laws to protect Americans from people who may be criminals, carrying infectious diseases, or are committed to changing America rather than becoming American. It is important to remember that during the late 19th century, when we had enormous immigration, it was still tightly controlled. Immigrants were processed in an orderly way. If they had infectious diseases, criminal records, were anarchists, or even showed signs of low morals, they were denied entry and sent back to their home countries. The modern left-wing idea of opening the borders as wide as possible would have been thoroughly rejected in any previous era. The people who are coming to our borders determined to begin their lives in America by breaking the law are being encouraged by Ocasio-Cortez and her hard left allies. The Democrats have refused to control the border. They have refused to amend the amnesty provision in our immigration law, which is the loophole used by most sophisticated people seeking illegal entry. The Democrats have also refused to provide legislative solutions for various left-wing judicial decisions that have crippled our enforcement capabilities. So the word is out that it is a good time to sneak in to the United States. Now the Democrats are going a step further and talking about providing free health care for people who come here illegally. When word spreads that sick people can sneak into America and get free medical treatment from American doctors and nurses, the flood of sick immigrants will double and triple from the current numbers. Meanwhile, the current team of hard-working, patriotic government officials working to enforce and administer our laws are being overwhelmed by the size of the invasion. Instead of helping these officials with their difficult jobs, the Democrats attack them, try to shame them, lie about them, and hold them up to ridicule. This is not a cost-free political game. The Ocasio-Cortez wing is blocking the help, undermining the existing workforce, maximizing the number of new people coming into the United States illegally, and then blaming the hard-working immigration and border agents for trying to do their jobs. We owe it to the father and daughter who died in the Rio Grande to make clear who has moral responsibility for the system that lured them into the river and left them to die. That system is one upheld by the Democratic Party's political ideology in the House and Senate, and now in the presidential nominating process. Every day that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the Democrat from California, and the Ocasio-Cortez radicals block reforming the immigration system, the House Republicans should take special orders and show the pictures of those who died the day before in a system the Democrats helped ruin and refuse to reform. Furthermore, Ocasio-Cortez should be called out for the viciousness, destructiveness, and dishonesty of her words and actions. It is time for decent people to stand up to her and ask, "Have you no shame?" And that is from Newt Gingrich, an opinion piece authored for Fox News. And it was published 3 days ago. And he, of course, is absolutely correct. The left in America is using these people as political pawns. they're enticing these people to come here. As I have said many times, to come here with their with their desire to make money rather than becoming an American, or they're committed to changing America into what they left behind rather than becoming an American. We see this again and again. And we see Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her cohorts on the left screaming about this issue, screaming about the problem, pointing fingers of blame at the current presidential administration. Every time there's a camera available or a reporter nearby, they make it a point to condemn the current administration for everything that's going on, and then vote down aid for the people affected. They vote against billions of dollars in funding to help the very people they're using as pawns. And what that shows us is that these people don't really care about these immigrants, these illegals. They don't care about their well-being. They don't care about the children. They don't care about that dad and daughter who died in the Rio Grande, except to the extent that they can use them as political pawns. We should all be aware of this, and we should be telling our friends this is what's going on. And they realize that's what's going on, and they are currently working on putting that blame on the people who are actually trying to help. They're pointing at you and I and our representatives who are trying to make a difference and change things so this doesn't happen anymore, and blaming them for the problem. It's despicable. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. This edition of The Daily Perspective brought to you by The Daily Perspective Newsletter. Yes, I can sponsor myself if I want to. The Daily Perspective Newsletter is your daily dose of this show coming to your inbox. It's primarily all of the links that I use to research the show, plus a lot we never get to just because there's not enough time. So get signed up today and get all this information into your inbox and keep yourself informed. It's really easy. You can just go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. There's a sign-up form right there on the front page. It's over on the right-hand side. You can also go to the Mark and Mac Show or Daily Perspective Facebook pages. There is a sign-up now button in both places. You can get signed up there as well. So get signed up today and get this show in your inbox as well, the Daily Perspective Newsletter. Newt Gingrich summed this situation up on the border perfectly, I think. And he said something in that about how the Democrat Party really can be held liable for what's going on the border. And if you have any doubts about that, I have a story coming here from the Washington Examiner that actually does substantiate it. A Democratic Congresswoman is sending staff to Mexico's northern border town of Ciudad Juarez to find migrants returned from El Paso, Texas, under the Remain in Mexico policy, then coaching them to pretend they can't speak Spanish to exploit a loophole letting them return to the U.S. The National Border Patrol Council's El Paso chapter and several Customs and Border Protection personnel told the Washington Examiner aides to Representative Veronica Escobar, who took over 2020 Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke's district, and the local Catholic diocese have interviewed thousands of migrants in Juarez over the past few weeks to find cases where Department of Homeland Security officials may have wrongly returned people. One senior union official who shared evidence with the Washington Examiner from concerned CBP managers and rank-and-file members said, "What we believe is happening is Veronica Escobar's office is going to basically second-guess and obstruct work already done by the Border Patrol." Under the Bilateral Migration Protection Protocols, or Remain in Mexico policy, anyone returned must be fluent in Spanish, because they may have to reside in Mexico up to 5 years until a U.S. federal judge decides their asylum claim. A Democratic politician's aides at re-escorting people back to the port are telling officers the Central American individual with them cannot speak Spanish, despite their having communicated in Spanish days earlier. The union representative said, "What we're hearing from management is they're attempting to return people, and the story was changed in Mexico, where a person who understood Spanish before now doesn't understand, where a person who didn't have any health issues before now has health issues." Escobar's team has sought interviews with 6,000 people who were returned last month, according to one CBP official. The union learned from an intelligence unit within CBP that those doing the interviews are wearing recording devices during the interviews to tape conversations and possibly listen back later. The official said they went through and interviewed everybody, cherry-picked them, brought them back, and now they're using them as taglines. They're going over there and manufacturing a lot of these issues. All three border officials worried the interviews might be used to suggest the Border Patrol is wrongfully turning away a large number of asylum seekers. A second official said, "We had finally found a happy medium, because we always get crapped on when it comes to the immigration laws, and then they're finding loopholes to bring them back." Mark H. Metcalf, a former federal immigration judge during the George W. Bush administration, said the involvement of Escobar's office was likely more of a stunt than a genuine threat to the integrity of the process. He says, "She's trying to obviously say these people have been wrongly denied their claims and they're waiting when they shouldn't be." However, he said a criminal case would exist if Escobar were found to be complicit in an effort to perpetuate a fraud, which would have to include knowingly injecting false statements during interviews, follow-up conversations, and documents presented to U.S. officials. A Department of Homeland Security official aware of the situation said Democrats, nonprofit organizations, and 2020 hopefuls are furious that these migrants are not permitted to await their court dates in the U.S., where they have the opportunity to disappear and slip into the interior never to be seen again. By opposing a system that assists migrants and speeds wait times, these individuals are exposing a cause that looks more like a cover story for their political motivations. Any efforts to subvert and obstruct federal law enforcement operations should receive a full review. In one incident, an Escobar aide and diocese official walked a male migrant over the bridge in June and asked for him to be admitted into the U.S. because they had found he had cognitive disabilities. Officers took the boy and turned the case over to the Border Patrol, where an agent found a constituent information and privacy release form with the U.S. House of Representatives seal on it inside the 17-year-old's file. Two officials said the paper would have to have been put in his file while he was interviewed in Mexico and was not supposed to have been left there, because it would reveal to the Border Patrol that a member of Congress or their staff was meeting with migrants in Mexico. The boy has since returned to Mexico because the medical condition was not diagnosed by a medical professional, but by an aide of the congresswoman, according to one official. The union says management saw that form and was like, "What is this?" and reached out to our international liaison unit. And the ILU said, "Yes, Veronica Escobar and several other politicians are in Mexico trying to defeat the MPP program." Officials only discussed one port of entry in El Paso, but said they knew of three other incidents where Escobar's aides had walked back a Remain in Mexico program recipient. In another confirmed case, a female migrant was brought back to the port after claiming to have been raped in Juarez. The union officials said the onslaught of interviews suggests federal resources are being misspent. The officials said resources are being diverted into a foreign country in an attempt to reverse already decided legal action, meaning these people were found inadmissible under a new program and they must remain in Mexico. They're trying to subvert that. Now, of course, Escobar's office isn't returning requests for comments. They've been caught. Well, this really shouldn't be all that surprising. After all, Cory Booker himself, in a campaign stunt, escorted five illegals across the border. We know that Beto O'Rourke went to Mexico and made a campaign speech there. So we know what's happening is that these people are doing everything they can to break down our border system. They're trying to break the system. I've told you before, this is classic Cloward and Piven strategy. They're overwhelming a system, and they're using the result of that overwhelming operation to get their way. And it can't be allowed to happen. It has to be exposed for what it is. You and I have to be aware, informed, and we have to let our representatives, our senators and our congressional representatives, we have to let them know we're wise to what the leftists are doing. We know what they're up to. They're trying to break the border down. Veronica Escobar, this representative, Democrat from Texas. In fact, if you're on Facebook Live, you can see her picture on your screen right now. This woman is subverting our legal system. She's trying to exploit loopholes in order to further compromise our border security. Rather than representing and protecting the people of her district in Texas, she is endangering the people of her district in Texas by encouraging further criminal activity and incursion into our country by people who are trying to come here under false pretenses. She should be held accountable. And hopefully, whoever runs against her in the next election will use this incident against her and have her booted from office. I sincerely hope that happens. And everyone else who is doing similar things, she's just been caught. Others haven't been caught, but they're still guilty of subversion. They're still doing the same kind of things. This woman needs to be a poster child for what happens to you when you become a subversive. Frankly, I'd like to see her serve some jail time. I'd like to see Cory Booker and Beto O'Rourke serve some jail time as well. It won't happen. But a guy can hope, can't he? And I hope you understand that there is no ill feeling, no animus against people who are truly in need. We're a country that helps people in need around the world. And we have provision for people in need to come here if their need is real. But when politicians are lying about needs, our foot should go down, and it should go down hard. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Good to have you along today. Diving into the final segment for this Monday morning. And I'm going to rush through a handful of things here, okay? Just understand that. I've got to rush through a handful of stories because there's stuff I want to get across today. and I don't want to leave anything laying on the table by the time we're done. Okay? All right. First up, Senator Kamala Harris, Democrat from California, announced over the weekend on Saturday she would be investing $100 billion of federal money. By the way, there is no federal money. It's your money. Okay? The government has no money. It takes yours. It's your money. $100 billion of your money into housing assistance for black families as part of an effort to close the racial wealth gap in the United States if elected president. Quote, after generations of discrimination, it's time to give black families a real shot at homeownership. That's what she tweeted on Saturday. While appearing at Essence's Global Black Economic Forum, she emphasized the role of homeownership in driving the growth of wealth in the U.S. According to Harris's campaign, she would help 4 million home buyers through down payment and closing cost assistance, granting up to $25,000 from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Quote, if we eliminate racial wealth disparities in homeownership rates, median black wealth would grow $32,113 per household, and the wealth gap between black and white households would shrink 31%. This is according to her campaign. The program would target residents in redlined communities, areas the Homeowners Loan Corporation has dissuaded lenders from investing in, which her campaign identified as a culprit behind wealth disparities. Oh, I have to stop there. I don't want to, but I have to stop there. There's a reason the Homeowners Loan Corporation has dissuaded lenders from investing in these areas. It's very simple. That reason is that those who live in these areas don't pay their bills. If they invest, they'll never see the money again. Back to the article. Redlining has resulted in households of color receiving just 2% of the Federal Housing Administration loans expanded between 1934 and 1962, and formerly redlined neighborhoods are sites of deep racial disparities in home value and lending activity. This is according to an information sheet from her campaign. Her plan would also seek to increase credit access by altering credit reporting standards to include payments on credit cards, student loans, auto loans, and mortgage payments. The announcement came after polling showed her advancing amid a dispute with the front runner, former Vice President Joe Biden, over comments he made about racial issues. After she targeted Biden during the first Democratic primary debate, Biden's lead dropped in a Quinnipiac poll. That same poll showed Harris rising from 7% to 20% and leading Senator Elizabeth Pocahontas Warren, the Democrat from Massachusetts. Racial issues have become a major topic as many Democrats accuse the administration of bias against minorities. It's all a lie, by the way. Former Representative Beto O'Rourke of Texas, a Democrat, also sought to address racial wealth disparities with a plan that would vastly expand the government's investment in women and minority-owned businesses. The 2020 hopeful claimed his plan would unlock over $500 billion in resources and spur the development of 200,000 new women and minority-owned small businesses. It would also redirect $100 billion in federal contracting towards small business and expand access to mentorship opportunities, open a public credit reporting agency, and work through certain issues to expand access to markets and capital. So these candidates have ideas about involving the government in finances for people in who have minority status. I encourage you to remember what happened the last time government got involved in this way. It was during the Clinton administration. As a result, we got a housing bubble, and it crashed. You remember that? The Reinvestment Act? Yeah. What happened? All of those loans, which were commanded by the government. Loan institutions were forced to loan money to people who didn't have the credit scores that indicated that they were good to pay that money back. They made bad loans to people with bad credit. Those loans were bought and sold again and again and again. And finally, that debt bubble got bigger and bigger and bigger. Those worthless loans became more and more worthless, and eventually it all crashed. And it happened in the first place because government decided it knew better about credit and payments and wealth building than the people who actually have real-world experience with it. So if Kamala Harris is elected and she gets her way, she will put us through another market crash in housing. Because that is the only way that this can work out. Elizabeth Warren, by the way, God love her, bless her heart. She's decided she's going to take the head of something. She's vowed to tackle the mythical gender wage gap and a lack of diversity in the workplace. Despite the fact that the country has focused relentlessly on diversity for the past few decades, non-whites still aren't adequately represented in many industries and in leadership positions. People like Warren see systemic racism as the reason. Others may think there are not enough qualified applicants to fill those positions, possibly due to socioeconomic issues, rather than overt or covert racism. By the way, those people are the ones who are right about this. Nevertheless, Warren is going to tackle this issue and the gender wage gap, which doesn't actually exist. There is no wage gap. It's an earnings gap between men and women, and due to a variety of factors relating to different career choices between the sexes. As we've already illustrated with women's soccer, there are earnings gaps, and they're substantiated by real-world factors, not by prejudice. Ah, my. When those factors are taken into account, the gap nearly vanishes and there is no evidence. What remains is due to discrimination. That's not to say that discrimination never happens. It surely does. Yet the solutions proposed would do more to hurt women and businesses than help. But that is how politics works. That is the way it works. You have these people who are running for office who come in and propose to solve a problem that doesn't exist. They get people stirred up and angry about a problem that doesn't exist, and those people demand solutions to a problem that doesn't exist, and the candidate steps forward and says, here's what we're going to do about this problem that doesn't exist, and we're going to make good for all of these people who are hurt by this problem that doesn't exist, and we're going to be heroes in the eyes of all of these people by helping all of these people who are victims of a problem that doesn't exist. So that's what Elizabeth Warren is doing. She is lying to the people about problems that don't exist. She is misrepresenting statistics. She is misrepresenting facts and reinterpreting them to mean that there is gender bias and race bias where there is none. Because when you account for certain factors, you realize that these problems exist because of personal choices, not because of racism or sexism. These problems exist because of personal choices. Let's take the $15 minimum wage, which is part of what she's talking about, as an example. You can pay people $15 an hour. We have shown time and time again that when this happens, shifts get shortened, the payroll gets cut, fewer people have jobs, just so they can pay the people who are still on the staff $15 an hour. They have to shuffle everything, and they have to raise prices. And the left says, they can do that. They can afford to do that. It's a few cents here and a few cents there. It always amounts to more than a few cents here and a few cents there, and it always amounts to people losing their jobs. Always. And in some cases, everyone loses their jobs because the business shuts down, because it's already operating on such a slim margin that it can't afford any more expense. And who are these businesses? Small businesses. Small businesses make up most of the business in America. And small businesses are the ones who have to carry the weight. They carry this burden. Whenever government screws up, when government demands that a victim class be catered to in the workplace, it's always the small business that ends up folding as a result of the expense. Whether it's more tax paperwork or more compliance paperwork, they have to hire somebody or pay somebody on the outside to do that paperwork for them. That's another expense. And then there's the added expense by adding another 30 or 40% to somebody's pay and eliminating people. They stop getting paid. It's a terrible situation. It's never good. Never. And besides, in the food service business, which is the hospitality business, The people who make a lot of money are the ones who know how hospitality works. They realize that they can make a lot of money if they're hospitable, if they treat their customers well, if they bend over their backwards to serve, and they are cheerful. They know they can make a lot of money, more than $15 an hour if they're doing it right. But do-gooders like Elizabeth Warren come in and demand certain things be done for the people who won't learn how the system works and who refuse to be hospitable, but still want the money the successful people are making. When government meddles, everybody loses. And it's because of people like Elizabeth Warren that people lose. And that's it for today. God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.